Hi, family. My name is Waikina, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. Family, I've been trying to think about the words to wrap around this honor. That a woman who had become a $5 crackhead is blessed with the opportunity to stand in front of the people who God used to save her life and tell y'all about how the process worked and to thank you. I want to thank the Montgomery area for blessing me with this opportunity. I want to thank the God of my understanding who loved me enough and saw me in the wretched state and knew what I needed and sent me into the loving arms of Narcotics Anonymous. This is my 25th consecutive CPRCNA. I was standing out in the hall because I didn't know how I was supposed to come in. So my husband and I, we were standing out in the hall, and I saw and I felt the energy. I saw a bunch of people that used to chase death that were eager to come in here and get together so that we could have a meeting. If that's not a miracle, I don't know what is. This is my third most memorable CPRCNA convention. The first one was the one that my sponsor brought me to in 1992. It was my sponsor, my grand sponsor, one of my sister sponsees and I. I got here and I was overwhelmed and had no idea that this was the face of addiction, because using had kept me in a box. So everybody that I use, we kind of look the same. But we are such a rainbow coalition of different shapes, different sizes, different races, different ethnicities. And there was an energy here. And then there was the hug squad out there. People hugged me when I got here. And of course, since it was my first one, I bought like two or three outfits for each day and bought my whole little jewelry set. I was amazed. I was amazed. And I left here feeling so empowered, so grateful to be a part of this movement, because family, this is a movement of life. We have something so special here. Lives are transformed, and if you ever want to know what a miracle looks like, look to your right and look to your left, or look behind you, or look in front of you, because we are miracles. I think we often believe we often think that because there are so many of us here, that most addicts are finding recovery and finding joy, but that's not the case. Our lot, family, is jails, institutions, and death, and many don't make it here. So for every one that's here, there are so many others that are still out there suffering. So many others that have died. That sponsee sister that came with me, she died, man. She went back out. So if you have relapsed and God has blessed you to come back, welcome. Keep coming. But please know, you do not know how many chances you're going to get to come in and out. So while you're here, please stay here. My second most memorable CPRCNA was in 1998. The man that I love. Now, I am one of the women in this program that was blessed to find an awesome man that loves me, that respects me. I didn't think I was worthy, because for real, ladies, I come from that place where you can't have just one man anyway. You gotta have one man that got the money, one man that got the honey, one man that provides the emotional support, and then you gotta almost not love you to love me. But God had another plan. And what I'm talking about is one of the many blessings that I've had. And what I've learned about blessings is blessings are unwarranted, undeserved gifts. And each and every one of us gets some. So I may not get the ones that you get. You may not get the ones that I get. But if you keep coming in here, you're going to get some. But that man proposed to me after the banquet in 1998. March 28th marked 25 years that we've been together. We're coming up on 19 years of marriage. I call him Big Daddy. Not because he's big in stature, but because he's big in integrity. He loves God. He loves and serves this fellowship. He loves and serves his family. He's a man of integrity. He was in an accident a couple of months ago, and he called me and he said, "Baby, I was in an accident." Now, let me just keep it real right there. When he said accident, y'all, I kind of had dollar signs in my eyes. You know the drill. Somebody tap you in the back. Your neck hurt. You call the attorney. The attorney sends you to physical therapy. And then you get a check. I'm sorry. The last accident that I went, that's how that went down. Because God ain't through with me yet. So when he told me about the accident, I said, "Baby, you gonna get an attorney?" He said, "No, ain't nothing wrong with me." And I wish he could have seen the look on my face at the time, because I'm like, "Dude, that's free money." But he's a man of integrity. And I want to stand in front of all y'all, and I want to tell you, Big Daddy, I love you, and I thank God for you. My third most memorable CPRCNA is now CPRCNA 2017. Because I get to stand up and say, Narcotics Anonymous, I thank you for taking a wretch like me. When I say family, and everybody that knows me know that I use that term, and I don't take it loosely, because that is what you have been to me. I am an only child. My family was fragmented. You have been a consistent staple in my life. I've got aunts in here. I got uncles in here. I got sisters in here. I got brothers in here. You've celebrated my victories. You've pulled me up on my mess. You've encouraged me when I felt like going on, when I felt like giving up. And it's been those ties that bind us that are stronger than they'll ever tear us apart, as long as we don't let them, family. So I'm a native Washingtonian, family. And I'm a baby boomer, right? Like, I got an AARP card and everything. Look, I'm loving my discounts. You know, so I didn't come up in the free love, you know, sort of thing. But I did come up when an artist named George Clinton said that we were one nation under a groove. Getting down. And that sounded real good to me. Because prior to that, there were some unhealthy things in my childhood. I learned hurt at home. I learned dishonesty at home. I learned pain at home. I learned fear at home. I wanted to be every place else but where I was. I wanted to be everybody else but me. Totally uncomfortable in my own skin. And I got to a place where I started trying externally to fix what was going on around me and internally. The first thing that I picked up was a pack of Cools. I had a girlfriend take me in the woods behind the school. She had a pack. And I sat there and choked and coughed until I finally got it right. The next thing that I picked up was profanity. Because I needed to sound cool and thorough like the other people did. The next thing that I picked up was clothes. I had these jeans and I had put, McDonald's had this campaign for Big Mac. That went to all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, on a sesame seed bun. So I had two of those stickers, and I ironed one on the left cheek and one on the right cheek. And I strolled up into school the next day, and these two little dudes followed me for the whole day. And that told me that's how you deal with self-esteem, Joaquina. Get the men to notice you. So my attire didn't change till I got here. And then came the marijuana and the tabs and the alcohol and all of that stuff. And what happened, family, when the drugs came in, I did not use addictively over a period of time. I used addictively coming out of the gate because it was something about that euphoric state where everything was good. I felt good. I felt attractive. I felt thorough. I had a good social group. And it just fixed everything that I felt was broken. I started running away. I dropped out of school. So I went from being an honor student and the apple of my parents' eye to being a juvenile delinquent and a hot mess. So my last year in high school, I went to the 10th grade, first semester, report cards came out. I had four Fs and a B. I took a pencil and I used my artistry skills and I very artistically changed those F's to B's. And I handed my report card to my dad, and he was real cool with it. He ain't opened his mouth. We had dinner. When I got home the next day, room was tore up. He had found out the truth. And he sent me to an adolescent outpatient program. And I really couldn't understand what the problem was. I felt like all I needed to do was give me a job at McDonald's, hook up with some friends, give me an apartment, and that was my life plan. And my father wasn't having it. And he got me into a job corps center. And I went to that facility, and it's a real good program. And I had my first lesbian relationship in there. And I did that because I always wanted love, but there was something broken inside of me that could never feel it. So no matter what you did or what you gave, I couldn't feel it. So I got involved in that relationship, and she loved me. We were off to the races. That lasted for a little while. Then I came home, and I met my baby's daddy. Now, after meeting him for about a month or two, we feel like we in love. We ain't practice family planning or none of that. Y'all know what happened. I got pregnant, and then we already made family. And my son was about two or three, and I realized that I had made a mistake, that I ain't really want to be a mother. I don't want to do all of that, but the stage was already set. I loved the dude, but I was not emotionally equipped to be in the situation that I was in. So I made a whole bunch of decisions that were totally just based on how I felt, family. So dude wasn't acting right. So I said, okay, I'm going to show you, I'm going to leave. And then you're going to miss me because you're going to see what value I bring to this situation. And I need to say my baby's daddy and my son went right on with their lives without me. But the hit is when I ran away to 14th and W Street Northwest. Oh, some of y'all know. 14th and W Street in the mid-80s was a popular dope strip. Now, I was a little green when I got there. I met this really nice gentleman, come around, nice gentleman caller, come get me in the evenings and stuff. Now, we'd be sitting down talking, and all of a sudden, he'd go into this. And I'd be like, baby, what's wrong? You tired? He said, yeah, man, I had a long day. But then when I found out what that nod was about, and because I like to use anything that changes my mood, so my drug of choice is drugs. So when I found out what the nod was about, y'all know I had to get with that, and it was swell. And he was dealing, and everything was wonderful. And then he got locked up. And now I'm out on the streets, and I got a habit. And I don't really know how to handle the streets. I don't have no sponsor. I don't know how to handle a lot of stuff. I don't know that, boo, once you cop, and they say, go to the bathroom and get a bottle of water, go to the bathroom and get something, or go to the kitchen and get something, and they cooking the thing up. Don't leave, because once you take your eye off of it, you're getting short. You need to sit right there. So I had to learn a whole bunch of stuff the hard way. And then I started getting my own introduction with the Department of Corrections. My DCDC is 231795. I don't ever want to forget it, because it's inactive. And I know as long as I don't pick up, it's going to stay inactive. Because the only time that I commit crime is when I'm on it. So I start going in and out of jail. So now the kid, I've separated myself from my son. I'm shooting coke. I'm shooting dope. I'm smoking crack. Because I wasn't a successful addict, and what a successful addict is those of you that worked. If you worked and had your own place, you were a successful addict to me. I couldn't get that going on. So I wasn't one of those. I ain't had no real good hustle. You know, I couldn't like write paper or shoplift or do none of that stuff. So what I did was I used what was accessible to me, my walk-in ATM. So, my life's a hot mess, family. A hot mess. I've alienated myself from my family. I've abandoned my son. I got a record. I'm tricking. I'm playing Russian roulette with my life because I wasn't one of them high-end sisters. I tricked in parks. I went in basements. I go in cars. Wherever we could go, we would go. And I know that there was a God that loved me enough to protect me in my insanity. Because I did everything, everything, family, to put my life on the line. I've had to jump out of speeding cars, jump out of windows. I didn't had dudes put guns and knives to my head and throat. I have been raped more times than I can count, but he wouldn't let him take my life. So everything that went down was a direct result of the decisions that I made. So God loves me, but he will allow me also to live in my consequence. So if you're in here and you're having some problem with God because he lets some stuff happen, all I'll say is look at your part in it. And be grateful that you're still here and you had the opportunity to do something different. So, Judge Rankin. Uh-oh, some of y'all know Judge Rankin. In one of my probations or pretrial releases, Judge Rankin sent me to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and it was a lunchtime meeting, and I remember I walked up the steps in this place called Trust Clinic, and I walked into that room, and there were people in that room in business suits, nice dresses, clean, smelling good. And I remember thinking, where's the room with the other addicts? Because I never knew that God could clean you and raise you to that level, like y'all look out here tonight. But I sat in there, and because of what I saw, I identified out, because my head said, there is no way you could have experienced what I had and looked like that. So needless to say, that was my last meeting for a while. But in October of 89, I've been on a 2 or 3 day binge, and I went out and used the ATM, came on in, sat down, and was getting ready to get my thing on. And at that moment, I said, God, please take this away from me. And what I wanted was, I wanted the stem to combust. I wanted some miraculous sort of out of this world thing to happen, to let me know that God heard me. Because at that moment, family, I really was tired. And I didn't want to do that no more. But the thing that had fixed me was killing me, and I couldn't let it go. And I wanted to get out, but I'm digging the hole deeper and deeper. And when I prayed that prayer, nothing happened. I said, man, God don't want nothing to do with me. Because I was raised in church. But what I had was a secondhand understanding of God. I had my mama's understanding. But that's not how this will work. May you find a God of your understanding and find him now. Because you're going to need him. So nothing happened, and I got high, and I was frustrated. Now, that was October of 89. February 8th, 1990, I'm in a detox facility. And not because I woke up all of a sudden one morning and said, you know what, I'm going to detox. There was a sequence of events that the God of my understanding orchestrated that got me into this place called 42 North. And I stayed in there for 18 days, long enough to feel guilty, long enough to remember that I had left a child by the wayside, long enough to see that the sum total of my life was a few pieces of clothing in two Safeway bags. So they asked me if I wanted to go to treatment. And they had a special program for indigents. And I was indigent. So I said, okay, I'll go. And while I was in there, they asked me if I wanted to take the HIV test. I'm like, ooh, it's getting real now. I said, yeah, I'll take it. And I took it. And it came back positive. Now, I'd love to tell you that I was shocked. The shock would have been had it come back negative. Because I knew how I carried it. I remember sitting in an oil joint and we were talking about the HIV epidemic. And I remember saying, so what, because I'm going to die anyway. Because I'm in a hole and I don't know how to get out of it. I don't know how to stop using because that concept of just don't use is too simple for me. Because how do you not do something that's more natural to you at this point in your life than eating a good meal, taking a bath, brushing your teeth, paying your bills? That thing said go and I had to go. So the work was hard and the boss was mean, but I didn't know how to quit that job. So I went to treatment and I played the treatment game well. You know what the treatment game is. You go in, you follow the rules pretty much. You don't ruffle no feathers, but in your head you think about what you're going to do when you get out. Because now it's not, I don't want to not use, I want to use safely. I want to be like you successful addicts. You know, y'all with the jobs and apartments and stuff. That's what I want to do. And I had a very unsuccessful stint as a drug dealer. I'd go out on 12th and U early in the morning trying to call myself selling some little cocaines, and y'all would come through in your little suits and with your briefcases and stuff, and you get high and go to work and then come back after work. That was success. That's what I wanted. I want to do that. So I set up in treatment and I came up with the plan. The plan was, okay, I need to be responsible. Let me go and get me a couple of jobs. A couple, because I ain't had no legal, I tell y'all I had skill, but I ain't had no legal skills. So I'm going to get me a couple of jobs, and I'm going to get a place to stay. And in order for me to maintain my place to stay, I'm going to have to go to work. So in order for me to go to work, then I'm not going to be able to stay up all night and get high. And that was my plan. So y'all know I ain't shit at playing with nobody. And I got out, and I executed my plan. And my plan failed miserably, but I'm grateful. So, the last time I used family was August 15th, 1990. I tricked with a guy for $5 and a hit. That was the lowest of the low. That told me who and what had the power, and it was not me. And I knew after that situation, because when the brother pulled up on me, right? Now, it's about 4 or 5 in the morning. The sun's not up, so maybe it's about 3 or 4. He pulled up on me, nice car and everything. He said, "What's up?" I said, "What's up with you?" He said, "I got $5 and a hit." And I was like, I know you can do better than that. He said, "You can take it or leave it." And family, I couldn't leave it because I had to have one more. So I called somebody that I had met in the fellowship prior to going back out. And they came and got me. And that evening, they took me to this meeting. And somebody was sharing their first anniversary. And their mother was making comments. And I have no idea what she said. But the tears flowed. And my spirit was touched. And I walked out of that meeting. And I stood on the corner of 5th and K in front of that liquor store. And I said, "God, please help me." And when the words came out of my mouth, family, it felt like somebody had just taken a 500-pound coat off of me. I felt a feeling of relief and enlightenment because that war was done. I had had my custom-made butt whooping. I was done. Because I knew if I did not stop using, I was probably going to be found dead in an alley or in a park or in an abandoned building in the D.C. metropolitan area. As soon as I gave God that prayer, he was Johnny on the spot. He immediately started to put the people in my life that I needed. Y'all said, "Don't use, go to meetings, pray, help somebody with no strings attached." Shortly after that, Work the Steps came in. You told me you would love me until I learned how to love myself. I didn't have a high opinion of men when I came in here. I came from the place where you either get or you get got. So my objective was to get you before you got me. But I thank God for the men that were here that showed me respect. A brother took me to a meeting. He took me to a cookout up in Rock Creek Park. He said, "You want to go to a meeting, to a cookout?" And I said, "Yeah." And he introduced me to people. And then he said, "Come on, let me talk to you." So I said, "Oh, shucks, here we go now. It's that slide me to the side and talk to me thing." But he talked to me about recovery. He spoke words of hope and encouragement into me. He respected me because for real, y'all respected me before I could respect me. So I thank God for the gentlemen in this fellowship. I thank God for the men in here that treat us with respect. Because we come in here bruised and broken and hurting. I was told to get with the women. I was told the women stay with the women and the men stay with the men. And that was a struggle for me initially. Because I didn't mess with women in the street. Because you really had nothing to give me. You weren't going to buy me dope. You weren't going to house me. You weren't going to feed me. You weren't going to clothe me. What purpose did you have? But I found out nobody's going to understand me more than another recovering woman. Because when you take away everything that's external and you get to the exact nature of what makes us women, we are more alike than we are different, ladies. And part of that for me also was my own insecurity, my own sense of inadequacy. I'd walk around and say stuff like, you think you cute. It ain't that you think you cute. I think you cute, and I can't tell you. Because if I feel like I do, it's going to diminish me in some kind of way. There's power in sisterhood. And when I say sister, I'm not talking about race. Because what we have here transcends age, and it transcends race, transcends age and ethnicity. So sister is woman to woman in here. So family, y'all remember I told y'all about Judge Rankin, right? Well, I didn't abide by some of the regulations that Judge Rankin had given me. And I hooked up in this relationship earlier on, and the bottom line is I was foul in the relationship. And it was a very nice guy that did nothing but try to help me. But again, I came in with what I knew. What I knew how to do was to lie, to scheme, manipulate, and be any and everything that you needed me to be, say everything that you needed to hear to get my bottom line. And I did that, and I hurt him. So I was staying with him, and I got on my feet, and I rolled out. He came to where I was, and he said some things, and I pretty much was like, well, you can, you know, do you know what? And that may have been on a Monday. Tuesday, Metropolitan Police was knocking on my door because he had called and turned me in. Now, y'all know he was all kind of dirty so-and-sos, because what's one of the greatest creeds on the street? You don't snitch. You don't tell. So I had to go to D.C. jail and do a little time. I had to go down to Lorton and do a little time. I had to go to 19th Street Halfway House and do a little time. But I got so much love and support through that experience. I had people in Narcotics Anonymous that came to Lorton and visited me. They sent money orders to put on my books. People I could call and they prayed with me. And what they said is, baby girl, it's okay. Just don't use. Just don't use and you'll get through this. And I was angry with him. And I resented what he did. And what my sponsor did was she introduced me to the resentment prayer. And what she said is, anytime you have a resentment with somebody, you pray for them for 2 weeks straight, every day. You don't have to mean it. You don't have to want to do it. But you do it anyway. And in the middle of that, God will ease that disease out of your heart. And he will give you eyes to see your part in the picture. Because the reality is, I violated and I was foul, man. And I'm grateful that she told me that, because I had to go back to him and make an amends. Because I did not walk in here brimming with honesty and all that good stuff. I slept with some folk in here and I ain't tell them about the HIV thing. So yeah, I'm one that had to add some folk to the list when I got here. And I did that because I didn't have the honesty, the courage, and the integrity to be honest about it. And I went to a meeting and I heard about making an amends. And I saw one of the guys. So I called myself, I'm gonna make an amends to him. I ain't talked to no sponsor, I ain't done nothing. And I told him, man, I'm sorry, And instead of that man going upside my head after he got over his anger and or shock, he said, baby girl, that's all right. You gonna be around for the cure. If that ain't spiritual, if that's not a program of recovery, and I had to go back to those other two people and make that right. And thankfully to God, I did not spread that. After I got out of jail, there was a woman named Sandra H. that I met in DC area H&I. And I had talked to her before I got locked up about the warrant. And she said, baby, go ahead and turn yourself in. I'm going to be there for you. Now, y'all know, when she said that, I sat there very attentively, very respectfully, and thought to myself, woman, you must be crazy. But what she said is, sweetheart, you're going to deal with it now or you're going to deal with it later. So God in his own infinite wisdom and through that situation saw that I dealt with it a little earlier than I probably would have. But when I got out, I asked her to sponsor me. Because what I knew is she had some wisdom. And I was a little lacking in that area. She exemplified walking the walk. She was in service. She served in Narcotics Anonymous. She served her family. She built her life up. I heard her talk about having a disabled child and being at a low place where she wanted to drive off of the Anacostia Bridge, but she didn't do it. And my head said, okay, if she can hold on, I can hold on too. Because that HIV thing had me scared, family. I was diagnosed at a time when people were dropping like flies. HIV was a death sentence then. And I had no hope. I heard people talk about, I'd hear peers talk about what they were going to do in their retirement and seeing their kids grown and grandkids. And I couldn't envision any of that for me. But y'all just said, keep coming back. So I hadn't told her, but I went to a women's meeting at one of my predecessor's house. She was with her sponsees. And all I remember is they were talking about the first step. And I don't know what was said, but I know it was heart-to-heart sharing going on in that room. And I had never witnessed that before. But I left there feeling so open and so okay. That's when I shared and I disclosed my status to my sponsor. We left that place and she opened the car door up for me. And then she walked around to her side. And as she was walking around to the driver's side, softly, I said, I'm HIV positive. And she says, so? Changed my life. And I kept coming back. And I moved into an Oxford house. And I thank God for Oxford House. I thank God for Park Road. Because in that house, I learned how to have relationships with women. I learned how to develop friendships. I learned that if I have a friend, my friend can be a friend to another woman and be a friend to me too, and it doesn't negate from what we have. Because I always believe you can't be her friend and my friend the same. You gotta be my friend more, or you have to be her friend more. And one of my Oxford House sisters gave me that lesson. So I kept coming back, family, and I started building up my life because the women in my life told me the best thing that you can do, Wykina, to build your self-esteem is to do some positive things with your life. Give back. What are some of the goals and the dreams and the purposes that you had before drugs took them away? So I didn't know how to drive. So I learned how to drive. I got my very first apartment in recovery. I had dropped out of high school. And I remember thinking that I knew I needed to go back and get my high school education because I wanted to do college, because I had a dream of being a college graduate before that thing took hold. But I needed to finish high school, and I remember thinking, I don't want a GED. I sure wish that I could walk across the stage and get me a high school diploma and do that whole thing that I missed. And all I said was I wish, but my God heard me when I said I wish. Because then guess what? Somebody told me about a program in Northern Virginia called the External Diploma Program, where you do the program and you complete the courses and you get a high school diploma. So I have a high school diploma from Falls Church High School. And I went and I got my college degree. And I told y'all I met Big Daddy. And it was wonderful. And I remember being in a relationship was very important to me because I've always used a man or a woman to validate me, family. And I felt like I wanted to get married, but I didn't know if I wanted to get married because everybody else was getting married, or I knew a lot of other women that were getting married, or if I really wanted to get married for the right reason. And then my sponsor asked me something real profound. She said, well, just what do you think you bring to a relationship? And my response was the same as some of y'all's just now. Because when she said it, I could only think of one thing. I could only think of one thing. Because I didn't know about being in a partnership. I didn't know about loving unconditionally. But I kept coming back, and I started getting involved in those steps. The first, second, and third step prepared my body and my mind. The fourth through seventh step cleaned out my house. The eighth and ninth step have cleaned my yard. Step 10 keeps me in check. And then 11 and 12 sends me to my God so that I can get some direction of what my purpose and moves are in step 12. In 1999, I got sick, y'all. They said that HIV thing went from HIV to AIDS. And I got sick. I lost a lot of weight, and I got scared, and I thought I'd never feel hopeless in Narcotics Anonymous again. And I was scared because I didn't understand, because it's like, God, you've been so good to me. So why would you allow me to experience all of this and then bring me here and drop me? Because I was afraid I was getting ready to check out, and my husband was afraid. And at that point, it was time for me to go to another level or place in my relationship with my God. Because y'all gave me the defect concept and how to deal with those. But now I need to find out about what's this stuff that's going on in the recesses of my heart that keeps me bound, that keeps me afraid. God, I don't understand what your purpose is. So I started going to a place where I could learn more about the God that you introduced me to. So I have made a conscious decision to incorporate religion into my program of recovery. Because one of the things that you told me earlier on is, Joaquina, by any means necessary, get whatever it is that you need to heal and to get better. So whether it's church, whether it's therapy, whether it's yoga, whether it's meditation, whatever it is, because today I know I'm worth the investment and I want to be better. Because I don't take this gift of recovery for granted, family. I'm on borrowed time. I've got more years behind me than I do in front of me. But since he loved me enough to give me another chance, I am now holding myself accountable to him because I want him to be pleased with me. And I know the way that I please him, though, is by being of service to you. But the only way I'm going to appropriately serve you and serve you in his spirit is by getting intimate with him. I got to spend a little time with him. 11th step talks about prayer and meditation. Those relationships. There are two relationships that I have been working on diligently since I've been here. One is a relationship with my mother, and the other is a relationship with my son. I came from an abusive home. It has been a challenge to try to have a relationship with my former abuser. What you gave me here, Narcotics Anonymous family, has helped me to do that. But it has been challenging. And the reason why it's been challenging is because the little girl has had to have her process in healing. But thank God for this process, because I've gone from hating her to hating what she did, to realizing that she did the best that she could, to thanking God that she was there in my life, because in spite of the abuse, she did give me some good fundamental things in my upbringing. And her behavior reflected her sickness. And of course, as an addict, I can identify with sickness. So family, if I want to be forgiven, I better learn how to forgive up in here. And the forgiving is not so much for the other person, but the forgiving is for me so that I can be free. Y'all told me freedom was mine. I know the literature promises me freedom from active addiction, but I've become free from so many other things. And I have endured and I've stayed in that relationship. And it hasn't been easy. And there were some places where I fell short and I dropped the ball. But I kept at it. Until finally, about 6 months ago, I was sitting on my bed and I was talking to her. And family, that thing broke. I had become free. I don't know if any of you ever saw the movie called The Grinch That Stole Christmas. Remember when the Grinch was with that little girl and his heart just opened up and he just smiled and his life was changed? That's what I felt when I hung my phone up from my mother that day. And I knew that I was free, that it was okay. And for the first time in my 55 years of life, I feel her love. Because I never felt it. And until I go in to my heart with my God, and through prayer and meditation and relationship with him, until we go in my heart and get that stuff out, I won't break through. And I'll be bound. And I don't want to be bound, family. That son that I left, he's 35. My son has told me that he hated me. He's gone years without speaking to me. And y'all told me in spite of all of that, I still had to love him. I still had to reach out to him. And I'm gonna tell you something about love. It is easy to love somebody who's lovable, somebody who's loving you back. But where does your love stand when they may reject you? And I was in a spiritual house the other night, and I had my pastor, let me just say it, talk about the difference between phileo love and agape love. And phileo love is brotherly love. But that's the one that'll drop you like a hot potato if you do wrong. And what we all should be aspiring for is the agape love, because the agape love will help me to love you in spite of. And my God gives me a definition of love. He said that it's patient and it's kind and it doesn't envy and it doesn't boast and it's not proud and it's not rude. It doesn't keep record of wrongs. It relishes in the truth. It always protects and it never fails. And on my own spirit, I don't have that. But in the 11th step, we talk about getting the power from him. The power may be anything that I need in that situation. So the power for his will may be that I accept. The power may be that I practice more love. The power may be that I forgive. The power may be patient. All those things that go against my emotional nature. Because my emotional nature is, if you cross me or cut me off, I don't need you anyway. And that go for family members too. And when I first started getting in this kid's life, I tried to buy him. Yeah, because I come from a materialistic place. And thank God for the women in my life that said, baby, he don't need your stuff. He needs you. And then earlier on in the journey, when he was a minor, for real, I ain't want to be a custodial parent. And I felt ashamed, because what kind of mother don't want to parent her kid? But I was free for the first time in my life. I ain't want the responsibility of it. But if you new in here, I want you to know you can share right where you are. Because if you share where you are, you will get the help that you need. If you share a lie, you're going to get help with the lie. If you share a little bit of the situation, you're going to get a little bit of help with the situation. So I could come in here and I could say those things that I didn't like about me. Because what happened with that, me not wanting that, automatically transferred into my relationship with my kid, and he felt that. So then I get to the place and I work through that and I want to be involved in his life, and we go on, and he's hurt and he's bruised. And now he's got abandonment issues. And on top of that, now he's an Afghani vet. So he's seen combat duty. So he got mama issues. He got PTSD. They didn't diagnose him with depression. And I got to keep loving him. I got to keep reaching out, even if he don't reciprocate. I got to keep reaching out, even though he didn't tell family members how he detests me. And the only way I can get the strength to do that is, one, coming in here and telling y'all, so that you can encourage me. And some of you will even share your experience with me. And then going to my God and asking him to give me what I need. God, give me the power that I need in this relationship with my kids. So a few months ago, my husband and I, we were sitting in a diner, And I was supposed to get my grandson. He has a 13-year-old son, and I was supposed to get my grandson for the summer. And he didn't let my grandson come, and I was hurt. And I felt like he did it to hurt me. And I'm sitting in the diner, and I'm talking to Big Daddy, and the tears are rolling down. And all I can say is, God, please, please give me what I need to continue to reach out to this kid. Just to tell him that I love him. Just to tell him that I miss him. Help me to do that in spite of my hurt. And the tears were rolling down my eyes. And that was on a Tuesday. And family, that Wednesday, that kid called me. He called me the next day because God heard me. And we talked. And he started to tell me about some things that I had done to hurt him. And some of the stuff that he was telling me, y'all, it wasn't when I was using. It was when I was clean. And I didn't remember it. And my immediate emotional response was defense. Oh, I ain't do that. But thank God for the Spirit that came in and said, Wykina, you do not have the right in an amends process to try to minimize his interpretation of the harm. You gotta take it, and whatever it is he believed the harm is, you have to allow him to have that. And he has to be able to tell you. And he said, Ma, I need to be able to tell you so that I can move on. And family, my baby been calling me. Narcotics Anonymous family, anything that is good, that is right, that is decent about this dope fiend is because of God. Because of a good fundamental foundation my parents gave me, but as importantly, what you gave me, the fellowship, the steps, and the traditions are making me, and I didn't say have made me because I have in no way arrived. Family, sometimes I'm as raggedy as a bowl of yacht. But if I don't cop, I got a chance. You have loved me, and you are still loving me, to my predecessors that were there and that paved the way for us, that created these conventions, that created these areas, that knew that women needed a place where they could go and talk. So they created the women's racks. Knew that men needed a place where they could get transparent. So they created the men's racks. I thank you for what you did. I want you to know that what you invested in me has not been wasted. I love you. I thank you. Family, let's have a wonderful time this weekend. Look, let's love on one another. Hug somebody you don't know. Talk to somebody you don't know. And I'm gonna keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.